J.D. Crisson, a former Catholic priest and one of the, if not the most deeply respected biblical historians in our time, puts it this way. There is no lighthouse. There is no lighthouse keeper. There are only rafts made of our imagination. And there is the sea. Within this metaphor, he goes on to say, let me paraphrase it, that it is our self-made rafts that float on the great sea of transcendence, and that we get our glimpses of transcendence around the edges of our raft. Or when the sea begins to break our raft into pieces. Crisson is suggesting then that we concoct our theological gods, our ethical, social, and economic systems, our entire paradigm for understanding experience from our imaginations, often as a haven, if you will, from the sea itself. A haven from being in, engaging with the infinite, the transcendent. There are strong forces within each of us that want the security of such a raft. And there is also a part of each of us that wants to sometimes peer over the edge of the raft. We are terrified by that infinite sea, and yet a part of us is fascinated by it. Drawn to it. This is precisely that of which Melville speaks in the reading, which Becky read a few moments ago. It is the divine, the infinite part of us that longs for its home. Melville uses the word apotheosis, which means deification, or the divine part of ourselves. Straight up, he says, straight up leaps thy deification or divine nature, not from literal perishing, not that at all, but from a psychic perishing leading to the possibilities of yet a different raft. It is the human spirit, not fettered by the finite part of ourself, that fain would ever leave the port, or in Crisson's metaphor, look down into the depths at the edge of the raft. Such is the human condition. That terrified, we seek some insular Tahiti or build in our imagination a raft on which we enslave ourselves in the illusion of comfort and safety. While our real safety, if there be any, lies out there on in the sea, the indefinite, in that which can break up any raft we build or run aground forever, every ship in the port. We do at times tend to see our only friend, the sea, with all its uncertainty, as our bitterest foe. We are thus conflicted. Both of these images, Crisson's and Melville's, use the sea as a metaphor for the transcendent, for that deep well of intelligence which lies in our unconscious, and something which, with all its mysteries, is also greater than we can comprehend. And the sea indeed has been such a metaphor from the earliest written records in much of the world. Aside from the metaphor and based on our own experience, the seashore is an awesomely attractive environment and tends to generate a sense of peace and calm and of beauty in many, if not most of us. It is easy to get glimpses of one's place in the larger order of things during a sunset at the water's edge. The Reverend Forrest Church, long the senior minister of All Souls Church, our Unitarian Universalist Church in New York City, and who died only a few weeks ago from cancer, noted that we humans are of a species that knows it exists, yes, and knows that it will die. And that the tension between those two knowings is what religion is all about. Western religion tends to concern itself with something called God. Reverend Church sometimes commented that God is not God's name. He suggests that God is the name we give to the transcendent, which is both greater than us and yet exists within us. Is in the same spirit, Reverend Ralph Waldo Emerson, a Unitarian minister and contemporary of Melville, used the word oversoul for that self-same transcendent and contended that our individual soul was a part, almost a hologram of that oversoul. He contended that the word God itself carried too much baggage by his time in history to be really very useful. Both ministers, however, engaged with the infinite, the transcendent, as our greatest human endeavor. It is where the tension between being and not being is truly resolved. Crossan suggests that one aspect of the rafts we humans create to resolve that tension, sometimes taking on the aspect of landedness itself, is religion, certainly when taken as a specific system of belief and practice with promises of life everlasting. Western Orthodoxy is such a system. To be ordained as a minister over in that on that raft takes on the character of a kind of apotheosis, meaning the deification or divinization in some measure of the person ordained. That's certainly true of the Pope, and I suggest it's true to a degree of priest and minister alike in the Western tradition, as an idol at least is created, whose purpose is to bring everyone to safety near the center of the raft, while the sea as transcendence, as the infinite, as God, is mediated through Christ, Pope, priest, or minister, who tell us what we need to know about it. We as parishioners are not to experience it directly, even should we wish to do so. It is ours only to stay on the raft. We who are ordained in the Unitarian Universalist ministry are usually not cursed with that form of apotheosis. I'm rather pleased to say that. Our apotheosis, our rising to the fullness of our always potential divinity, just as yours is always potential as well, should it occur, is independent of ordination, has nothing to do with it at all. What it does have to do with is how willing indeed, even comfortable, we are out at the edge of the raft peering into the sea. Maybe swimming in it on occasion, and engaging with its mystery and its power. There is where we find our divinity, and there is where your divinity is found as well. Not permanently up there on the center of a raft, nor in the port. It is when we are willing to engage with the great mystery of existence in us, in creation itself, that we begin to experience our own apotheosis. For my own 50 years as a Unitarian and Universalist, 20 of which as an ordained minister, I suggest that we ordain ministers in the hope that they might somehow find a way to wheedle, cajole, empower, encourage, provoke, do whatever it takes to get us to look directly into the transcendent for ourselves, to stick our toe in it and engage with it, knowing all the while that another part of us doesn't want that at all. We ordain ministers, it seems to me, to be a sort of shaman, to stretch us, to get us off the center of our raft or out of the port and experience our own depths our own underworld, our own unconscious, where lies our own piece of the transcendent, and an awesome intelligence which tends to heal us rather than to create more separation from the natural world. For all the pride we use take in reason and rationality, our denominational religious stance is and always has been fundamentally not irrational, but rather non-rational. Like every religious stance, ours is an assumption based on a particular view of experience, and an assumption which can change when that experience changes. For all of our history, this has been recognized and accepted as our primary strength rather than a weakness. At the Council of Nicaea in 326 AD, our Unitarian ancestors objected when Constantine decreed almost overnight that one's engagement with transcendence must be mediated through the man-God Jesus. They opposed the introduction of creed and dogma into Western religion because they believed that creeds and dogmas truncated the religious impulse right at the knees. In America, the deists, our Unitarian forebears, believed that the transcendent expressed itself in natural law. Later, with the transcendentalists, that the human soul was a hologram of the oversoul. And the universalists, from their inception, have held to a loving transcendence in which we might safely swim any time of the day or night. All of these positions I mentioned were and are faith positions in their nature, and they all engage with transcendence from different perspectives, particularly so with how the transcendent plays out in the living of a human life. To be purely rational in that engagement with transcendence, or failing to embrace, or at least consider, new ways of viewing that engagement, is to perhaps miss the engagement altogether. Most in our denomination are measurably humanist, and among us are many rafts indeed. And one of them in particular has dominated some of our churches, particularly some churches and fellowships emerging roughly 50 years ago, mostly in university communities, in very profound ways. It is the raft on which sit, near the center, those who contend there is not only no other raft, but that there is nothing but raft. There is no sea. I myself sat on that raft for many years, adulating my rationality. Indifferent to any such thing as the transcendent and to anything much like worship, awe, or wonder, I know that raft well. For me, it began breaking up about 25 years ago, and it did so because my rationality alone could not get me through the night, which is rather another sermon altogether. I find myself today constructing yet a new raft around my seeming interdependence with all of creation. My experience suggests strongly that it is a reliable truth. So the raft I'm now on is a much smaller structure from which I can usually view the sea on all sides. And metaphor, simile, and allegory have given me a more useful way to hold this process than has scientific data or logic or exposition. I can say I am catching glimpses of that balm in Gilead, which is, yes, also a metaphor itself as I use it. I don't know if it's a Gilead, but the chasm between knowing I'm alive and that I'm going to die one day, a chasm once about the size of the Grand Canyon, is today more like a trickling mountain stream. There's indeed something of a balm in that. There's no right or wrong in any of this at all. We are each where we have to be for the moment. In this, our denomination, engagement with the transcendent is an individual thing we each pursue in community with each other. We are each free to believe, not, I suggest, what we want to. I've heard that so much over the years, and it has often led to trivialization of the venture. But rather, we are free to believe what we must at any given moment. And it is a journey for a lifetime. With respect to this journey, I leave you with the suggestion that our greatness, our apotheosis, our divinity, if you will, cannot be fully experienced when we are stuck in port or sitting comfortably in the same place in the center of some vast raft we have created with our imagination. Rather, in a figurative sense, it might be best gained out on the open sea, landless, where, in Melville's words, resides the highest truth, shoreless, indefinite as God. So is it better to perish, as we know things right now, in that howling infinite than to be ingloriously dashed upon the lee, even if that seemed to be safety. Our visits to our own vast intelligence, not usually available to our logical, rational mind, is where our apotheosis may be found. Thank you for hearing what I have to say. So let it be. Amen.